yourselves down.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
You're ready.
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
With great humility, I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
And then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
That the job he's currently seeking might just be one of those black jobs.
Ah, that's right. That's Michelle and Barack Obama. What a pair. And they were on stage at the DNC convention last night. Can you imagine this? Because I never thought I'd see it before. But this is a woman who is a black American woman. She appears to hate America with a deep, abiding passion. But she's up there playing the race card. And where does she and her husband live? Well, they have three houses, but their primary house is in an exclusive, nearly entirely white community, an exclusive gated community. And who lives there? People who can afford houses that cost north of $1 million. In fact, her house isn't north of $1 million. It's north of $20 million. And she's talking about playing the race card in the presidential race because she's speaking to the Democrats and she knows how they think. Welcome to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. And if you want to join the best conversation and talk journalism, it's right here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you happen to be a naysayer, I mean, maybe you think that Michelle Obama is right to play the race card, to talk about privilege, to talk about all of that when she seems to be, she and her husband seem to enjoy an amazing amount of privilege. But if you're a naysayer, your call is welcome and you'll go to the front of the line at 866-439-5277. You can always send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And our X poll, since we're talking presidential politics, should all government employees, and I would include the bureaucrats and the file clerks and the members of Congress, should all government employees be banned from lobbying the Congress or the bureaucracy? I'd answer that one yes. Where does the idea come from? Donald Trump this week called out the FDA and employees to Big Pharma pipeline, is what he calls it, the FDA employee to Big Pharma lobbyist pipeline. He says anybody who goes into government should be banned from ever being a lobbyist. Now, I realize there are some First Amendment issues with that, but I think you could address that in the law. Say, if you want to work for the federal government, you can never be a lobbyist. If you want to run for Congress or for the U.S. Senate, you can never work as a lobbyist. If you want to be president of the United States, good for you, but you can never work as a lobbyist. I think that's a great idea. He gave those remarks and made that proposal at the end of an interview where he called for an end to Big Pharma's chokehold on Washington, D.C. He says, you got to stop listening to the lobbyists. I'm not a big person on lobbyists. And by the way, you know how Joe Biden has been running around? Well, before he basically got kicked to the curb, because it was 1 month ago today that the Democrat Party, some of its top members, went to Joe's house in Delaware. He was still planning to run for re-election, and they said, basically, get out or we'll drag you out of the Oval Office. And so he caved in. He got his swan song late at night, about 11:30 East Coast time. He got to give that final speech earlier this week, and then he hopped in Air Force One and flew off to California, I'm guessing so he could be as far away from the DNC convention as possible. So who was on the stage last night? Michelle and Barack Obama. What a pair. Barack shows up at the Democrat convention last night to sing Joe Biden's praises after politically burying Joe Biden 6 feet under 1 month ago today. The former president has never been a fan of Slow Joe. And if you don't believe me when I say that, just consider it was Barry Obama who once said, never underestimate Joe's ability to F things up. On the other hand, a decade ago, Barry described Kamala Harris as, quote, the best looking attorney general in America. You see, looks and skin color mean a lot to the Obamas. And apparently the press corps is carrying water for them. Consider the fact that earlier this week, Donald Trump showed up in Michigan. He showed up in a town called Howell, Michigan. And he was asked by a reporter, Is it true? We've been hearing reports that you came to this town because it's a town identified with white supremacy. Do you know what? Trump gave one of his most brilliant replies when that reporter said, "We're told you came here because the town identifies or is identified with white supremacy." Listen to what Donald Trump said.
Who was here in 2021?
Joe Biden.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
He answered Joe Biden. He says, who was here 2021? Joe Biden. And yet nobody asks Joe Biden, who is an unrepentant racist. He was actually labeled a racist by none other than Kamala Harris, currently the nominee of the Democrat Party. She called him out on the debate stage for that. That was, of course, before she dropped out and had to get the consolation prize of serving as vice president to Joe Biden. Well, Michelle Obama last night even questioned, as you heard, who's going to tell Donald Trump that the president might just be one of those black jobs. Michelle, in my estimation, hates this country. During campaign speeches for her husband, she called America, quote, just downright mean, and a country guided by fear and filled with cynics and sloths and complacency. You're going to tell me that that woman likes the United States of America? Now, the U.S. has been very, very nice to her. She grew up in a middle-class family. She went to some of the top universities in America. She graduated from Harvard Law. She was First Lady of the United States. She wasn't exactly held back by her gender or her skin color, but she's never going to let you forget that. Last night, she told the DNC convention, and this was unbelievable. She told the DNC convention delegates that her parents always distrusted people. Listen to what she said.
She and my father didn't aspire to be wealthy. In fact, they were suspicious of folks who took more than they needed.
Now, that comes from a woman who lives in a $26 million seaside mansion whose net worth is measured in the tens of millions. Various estimates have it anywhere from $70 million to $160 million. Oh, and by the way, the neighborhood that she needs apparently is a long ways from Chicago. It's a primarily white, extraordinarily rich, exclusive neighborhood on Martha's Vineyard. But don't take more than you need. That would make my parents suspicious. If she's claiming that as a value, I don't know. Barack, for his part, aside from singing the praises of the guy he buried a month ago, even managed to work in a visual penis joke at Donald Trump's expense. A real crowd pleaser.
Here's a 78-year-old billionaire who has not stopped whining about his problems since he rode down his golden escalator 9 years ago. It has been a constant stream of gripes and grievances that's actually been getting worse now that he's afraid of losing to Kamala. There's the childish nicknames. The crazy conspiracy theories. This weird obsession with crowd sizes.
And then he held his hands out in front of him, and the audience got the joke. Keep it classy, Barry. The Obamas ran Joe Biden's presidency for the last 4 years, and here's my advice. I think you should assume that the Obamas plan to do the same if hapless Kamala somehow manages to eke out a victory in November. I don't think that's likely, but I think the Obamas have plans if it happens. Glad to be with you on a Wednesday. Always glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network. When it comes
to Reynolds Defense Firm.
Ever wonder what a vegan actually is?
They say cows are bad for the environment because all they do is eat plants and fart, just like vegans.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense, a lot of nonsense.
Right, you're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
Well, you don't have to be a psychologist to understand that apparently Tim Walz, the vice presidential running mate of Kamala Harris, is getting tired of having to explain his lies. And the fact is, since Harris is not doing press conferences, she's not doing interviews, she's basically not answering any questions at all, then the reporters start asking questions of Tim Walz. And Tim apparently has a short fuse. Consider this response when he was asked about reproductive care, IVF, and that issue. And it is an issue. He said, even if we wouldn't make the same choice for ourselves, there's a golden rule. Mind your own damn business. Now, that came from Tim Walz at his very first rally with Vice President Harris earlier this month. And he said, look, that includes IVF, and this gets personal for me and my family. Well, you know, it's personal for a lot of people. Let me tell you why this is an issue. Of course, I am pro-life. The Democrats are pro-death. In fact, there have been 25 deaths during the Democrat National Convention already. Did you know about that? Did the mainstream media bother to tell you 25 have died during the DNC? I know they were unborn babies, but Planned Parenthood ran around and is still running around at the DNC doing free abortions outside the convention hall. And they have already, they're bragging that they've eliminated the lives of 25 unborn babies, as though that's something to be proud of. But a side issue with that is this. In vitro fertilization, known as IVF, it involves creating a number of embryos. Some are implanted in the prospective mom. I mean, no matter whose egg or sperm created it, they are implanted in mom. And oftentimes, a pregnancy results before they're done with these 6 or 8 or 10 or 12 embryos. So the question is, what do you do with the leftover embryos? Well, leftover almost anything else in the world. A junked car, leftovers that stayed in the fridge too long, you just throw them in the trash. The problem is, and I think it's a good thing that our society says, you will treat human beings and their remains differently. Well, these aren't remains. These are little embryos. They are human life. They could become a baby, or they could simply be thrown away as medical trash, which is what is done in too many places. A family will say, we want a baby. Okay, we'll knock out about a dozen embryos. We'll try a few of them. If it takes, what do you want us to do with the rest of them? Oh, just discard them. Throw them away. Well, there are a lot of people, including me, who object to that and say, no, that's immoral. If you think, well, that's kind of a stupid, narrow way to put it. You know, the fact is, if you have somebody die in your family, even though that person is gone, do you want their remains to be treated respectfully? And they're just remains. They're not going to be reanimated, but we still have laws. We literally throw people in prison if they do not treat remains respectfully. Well, if you're going to treat remains respectfully, how do you explain saying, yeah, we got a dozen leftover embryos. Ah, just flush them down the drain. They're just trash at this point. Well, what has Tim Walz been doing? Lying like he has been since we first sort of heard of him when he was the choice of Kamala Harris. He's lied about his military career. He's lied about being deployed to a war. He was ordered deployed. He just didn't go. He ran from the National Guard. And he has a lot of other things wrong with him as well. So he runs around bragging that he and his family have 2 wonderful children as a result of IVF, and he feels very personally about it. Problem is, he doesn't have 2 kids as a result of IVF. He has 2 kids as a result of IUI. And you say, well, what's the difference? IVF creates real human embryos. Do you know what intrauterine insemination creates? Basically a hot shot of sperm. I mean, you concentrate the sperm and it makes some women pregnant who could get pregnant otherwise. God bless them. That's a wonderful thing to create a new life. But it doesn't involve the destruction of embryos. So Tim Walz has been lying to Americans saying, my kids came from IVF. That is absolutely untrue, like a lot of the other lies that Tim Walz tells. And since he's the only one in the team that's actually talking to the media, expect him to get a few questions on it. Tough luck, Tim. It is our business. You're running for high office. Our question of the day comes in from Barbara. Lars, why do Michelle and Barack say you all? She's from South Chicago. And he's from South Honolulu. I don't get it. Barbara, I don't get it either. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now.
I'm going to give today's Daily Grill to a transit agency in the Northwest, and these days that's not hard. I mean, there are some bad transit agencies, and all of them in the Northwest are seeing declining ridership, even as they pour billions of dollars. No overstatement in that. Billions of additional dollars in Seattle, billions in Portland. They're pouring all that money in, and fewer people are riding transit. Would you keep flushing money down that rat hole? Well, they found a brand new way to do it. I got a press release this morning. TriMet's new battery electric buses are officially on the road. 24 next generation e-buses are entering service with TriMet this year. The first of the riders began to ride in July. Now, here's the problem. The buses cost twice as much money. They don't save anything. They, in fact, cost more money to run than clean diesel buses. So the grill today to TriMet. Our best email of the day, but you can send more to talk@LarsLarson.com. And I've had people asking, wouldn't RFK Jr. make a great member of the Trump team? Absolutely not. Fact is, I got this email from Bonnie, who said, Lars, I remember back to DJT's first campaign, that's Trump, when he talked about reaching across the aisle and making deals. I didn't like the idea because what was of the other side wanted was bad for our country. 7 years of rabid TDS, Trump derangement syndrome, has opened my mind a bit on that, although it hasn't for the syndrome's staunchest sufferers. I think there are going to be Democrats and independents who are tired of the weak economy and evaporating safety and may be receptive to a DJT RFK team. No, I don't see it. Donald Trump is conservative. He's conservative on energy, on taxes, on government, on life, on just about everything under the sun. RFK, by his positions over the years, has been a screaming left-wing liberal. He hates oil. He wants oil drilling and fracking banned. He wants abortion to the moment of birth. On every single issue that matters in this country, RFK is as far to the left as you can possibly get, unless, of course, you want to sit down and talk to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Now, what's going to be interesting, RFK Jr. says he's giving a major speech tomorrow. I guess a major speech being one in which the media actually pays attention to what RFK Jr. has to say. I think he's going to make a pitch to try to join Donald Trump's campaign. I don't think it's going to work, but I think he's going to make the pitch all the same. His presidential candidate campaign is now running on fumes at this point. It is very clear that Donald Trump's going to win. Kamala Harris is going to come in second, and RFK might pick up 4 or 5% of the vote. He doesn't have a chance, so at this point, he's looking for a lifeboat. And he doesn't want to go to Kamala Harris, even though his politics are a whole lot like hers. Instead, he's going to Donald Trump. Hey, I'll endorse you if you'll give me a job. That's kind of pathetic, isn't it, RFK? In any case, glad to be with you. Discount Magic Mushrooms in the Northwest. That's coming up next on the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. Someone has a plan for illegal aliens.
Back in the White House, I will terminate every open borders policy of the Biden administration and begin the largest deportation operation in American history.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. I do not partake in magic mushrooms or the weed either, but I'm fascinated with the myriad of ways that people in the Northwest have figured out to damage or even in some cases destroy themselves, usually with the help of drugs. So the fact that Willamette Week and WWeek.com is writing about discount magic mushrooms being the catalyst to possibly push Oregon's psychedelics market to the next level. Aaron, you're the managing editor. You had to ride herd on this story. Welcome back to the program and tell us what's going on.
Well, it's a pretty interesting story because it involves a penny stocks company from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, a mushroom tripping center in Old Town, in the heart of Old Town's dysfunction, and a financial plan that feels unusual. Let's use those words. Unusual, the financial plan.
Squishy, unusual, good unusual, bad unusual. What kind of unusual?
Well, the company that is behind this new psilocybin service center, the psilocybin service center is called the Sacred Mushroom. It is based in Fort Lauderdale. It's called, it's a cannabis company. It has some shaky financials and a key player who got in some serious trouble with the feds. It's a penny stock company. Familiar with penny stock, you might.
Oh, yeah.
Your listeners might be from the opening of Wall Street, where
you know what, Aaron? You're starting to break up badly enough. I want to see if we can get Joel to get you to a different line and maybe a more firm line, because I want people to hear what you're saying. But just to explain, penny stocks don't all cost a penny, but they are very, very low-cost stocks. In fact, you can, in some cases, buy stock in a company for a nickel a share or 10 or 20 cents a share. But because they're penny stocks, they tend to be more than a little bit volatile, which means that sometimes they just kind of go away. And sometimes you, if you buy something for a nickel and it goes to 15 cents, you actually dramatically increase the amount of money that you can make on something like that. So they could be very, very attractive if this becomes what they're going to do. The problem is if they're trying to back up a big financial operation. I mean, we're talking, as I understand the cost, because as I said, I don't go to the magic mushroom shops or anything like that, that you may be talking about treatments that cost hundreds or even thousands of dollars. I'm going to see if we can get Aaron back a little bit later. In the meantime, I want to talk to a naysayer, our first naysayer of Wednesday. Andrew, welcome to the program. What do you and I disagree about that makes you a naysayer today?
Well, I was a little surprised with the attitude I just heard about RFK Jr. possibly going to work for Trump, and that you thought that was pathetic. And I just I was a little surprised by that attitude, Lars. I think that
do you want me to explain why I think it's pathetic?
Sure.
Okay, I have strong feelings about lots of issues. So does RFK Jr. It happens that most of his positions on almost everything under the sun, except maybe vaccines, do not agree with conservatives at all. So what I'm suggesting is pathetic is when somebody says, I want to run for president, and I'm going to run based on the things I believe in. But when it looks like my, you know, my campaign is running out of gas, then I might jump and see if I can trade my endorsement for a job with a guy who I disagree with on almost everything. Andrew, hold that thought for a second. Let me get back to Aaron. Aaron, did we get you to a more solid line?
I hope so.
All right. So tell me this. So you got this little penny stock company in Florida that wants to popularize and maybe even sell people a piece, an equity piece of the mushroom operation in Oregon. Is it really going to be that big a deal? Because the last time I read about some of these centers that were doing, you know, the psilocybin therapy, as they're calling it, you're talking about stuff that costs hundreds or thousands of dollars, aren't you?
About whether or not there really is any money in this. Certainly there are plenty of psychedelic tourists who are coming to Oregon because it's a place where you can do mushrooms, often in luxurious settings. And pay a pretty penny to do so. The question of whether or not this is worth investing in is a whole different question. If you have a company, say, a Florida-based company that was once riding high on the cannabis boom, but its stocks are now trading for 3 cents a share, this might be an opportunity, theoretically, for such a company to inflate the value of its stock. Then that would lead to questions about whether or not the business plan is, in fact, to make money, or whether or not
pump, or is it pump and dump?
I'm glad you said that phrase and not me. But
well, I was going to save it for the Kamala Harris campaign, but I decided to use it on mushrooms instead.
You know, you can use it on anything you want to. It's a very useful short phrase. There are real questions about the business model. There are real questions about the market more generally, not just these guys in particular. I think one of the things that you're seeing them do that you could describe charitably as an innovation is they're offering to host psychedelic Halloween.
You know what, Aaron? We are busting up so very, very badly. I, We're just going to have to hear the story another day. I think it's because his cell phone is in a remote area or something. Maybe he's standing with his tinfoil hat on. But the fact is, we'll get more of that later. Andrew, all I'm saying is, if you say you believe in something and you're going to run for president, good. Bully for you. But then if you say, I've decided to throw away all my values and go to work for somebody who I completely disagree with on just about every issue under the sun, but it might give me a gig at this late point in RFK Jr.'s life, I think that's what's pathetic.
I have to disagree. I think that most people have values someplace, even if we don't agree on everything.
Would you violate your values, your closely held values, to get a job?
If you thought you could make a difference in that job.
Well, but if you're going to make a difference and you're going to get a gig working for Donald Trump, who you disagree with on abortion, energy, just about every subject under the sun, RFK and Donald Trump are on opposite ends of the spectrum. So how are you going to make a difference when the guy you're going to call boss believes 180 degrees the other direction from what you believe?
Well, Lars, I have to work for people I disagree with every day. I still take the job.
You walk in, if you work for somebody, you do what they direct you to do. So let's say you're a vegan, but you say, I really need a job, and the only job I can get is in a meat market. Well, then you go to work in the meat market, and you cut meat. And you might say, I really find this abhorrent, but I needed a job, so I'm willing to cut meat. But you're not going to change them over from selling steak and hamburger to selling broccoli and Brussels sprouts. You're not going to change at all. You're just going to take orders, aren't you?
I think that example's maybe a little extreme on going from a vegan to working in a meat market. There's lots of places where you might disagree with somebody, but there's jobs that you can do and do a good job at.
Let me give you an example. One of the things RFK endorses is a 70% marginal tax rate, almost doubling the tax rates in America. He believes in that, so does AOC. Donald Trump believes in bringing the tax rates down. He's done it before, and he says he'll do it again. What is RFK going to do that supports his values if he goes to work for a guy who believes in reducing taxes when he believes in increasing taxes?
He doesn't have to work in a department where he's dealing with finances and taxes.
How about oil? He could be the Interior Secretary. I'll tell you what, Andrew, I'm really tempted on this one, so I want to hold you through the break if you'll do that. We'll have to tell you about magic mushrooms another day. Glad to have you with me on a Wednesday. Always glad to take your calls at 866-439-5277. You're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
A message from Lars.
I'd like to apologize to anyone I've not offended yet. Please be patient. I'll get to you shortly.
Who's next? This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's Wednesday, and of course, it's day three of the DNC convention. And I'm kind of curious because Andrew, the naysayer, had called in and said, look, why not RFK? What's wrong with him? Why would he not be a good fit for the Trump cabinet? And my answer to that is it almost, and I can't find much of anything that RFK stands for that would match up with Donald Trump, nor can I find anything Donald Trump stands for that isn't contradicted by what RFK Jr. stands for. So if RFK Jr. tells all of his, fans and supporters, because he has maybe 4% support in the presidential sweepstakes, so there are people out there who say, I'd cast a vote for that guy. What does it tell them when you say, and now I'm going to go to work for a guy, I'm going to support him, help him get elected, and everything he believes in is not what I believe in? What does it say to supporters of Donald Trump if he took that deal? What does it say to supporters of RFK Jr. if he asked for that deal? Can you tell me?
So I think that the American people, Lars, are tired of talking about the things that we disagree on, because we all disagree on a whole heck of a lot. But I think that they're more interested in talking about what we do agree on right now, because there's a lot of things we agree on that we could, make a difference on.
Give me an example. Give me an example.
Hold on, Lars. Let me finish my point.
What's your point?
I think in the Department of Health or the Department of Justice, RFK Jr. could do some good work for Donald Trump. And I think that if you listen to RFK Jr.'s interviews, he often talks about wanting to work on things that the American people agree on instead of just polarizing issues that Democrats and Republicans are never going to agree on.
Except here's the problem, Andrew. We, for the most part, hire government to deal with the things we disagree on. You understand what I'm saying? If there's something that there's vast agreement on, you don't need the government to step in, do you? I mean, if every parent in America said, I'm going to keep track of everything my kid does on social media so they don't fall victim to a pervert or a criminal, well, then you don't need the government to step in. Unfortunately, we don't have that situation. So government gets involved on the things we primarily that we disagree on. So saying, do we all agree that puppies and kittens are cute? Yep. So we don't need a law requiring people to think puppies and kittens are cute. No, we don't need that. How about this? Everybody should be able to breathe the air. Everybody should be able to walk down the street. Okay, we all agree on that. In fact, one of those is in the Constitution. So do we need the government to get involved? It just sounds like you're doing a kumbaya where you're saying, well, let's get the things we can agree on. Tell me something that Kamala Harris and Donald Trump agree on. One thing.
I don't know. Well,
don't take it from Trump's point of view. Take it from Kamala Harris's point of view. Because last night at the DNC convention, you had Obama up on the stage saying, we're all Americans and we're all together on this. Tell me one thing that Kamala Harris says, yep, you know what, Trump was right about that. The only thing I can think of is she decided to steal Trump's idea of not taxing tip income. That's one they agree on. But that's one that has about 70% public support. So in other words, after Donald Trump proposed it, after the American public said, it's a terrific idea, 70% of us like it, did she decide to get on board and say, hey, I'm for that, even though 2 years ago she cast the deciding vote to give the IRS a gigantic number of new agents, and one of their first initiatives was to go after people's tip income. So she voted for the IRS to have the resources to chase down somebody who makes tip income, and now she says, oh, but I'm not in favor of taxing that. So the only thing she finds to agree with Trump on is something where she's already done the opposite.
Are we talking about Kamala, or are we talking about RFK Jr. going to work for Trump?
I'm saying, when you say, why don't we get together on the things we agree on, I ask you, tell me one thing that Donald Trump and RFK agree on.
I think that both the Department of Health and the Department of
You mean the
of
FDA
Justice,
or the CDC or what?
Well, he could be an attorney general. He could work at the CDC.
He could be attorney general?
Sure.
That'd be interesting.
I don't agree with all the decisions that he's, all the litigation that he's done as an attorney, but.
No, so you're hiring a guy who's routinely gone after capitalist enterprises, oil companies, and all that, and you're going to have Donald Trump, who's in favor of drill, harvest America's energy, put it to use, and he's going to make this guy attorney general. So while he's trying to make sure that American energy prospers, RFK can use the DOJ to shut it down. How do you think that's going to work out?
The first time that Trump hired somebody that went against him.
And he's made some mistakes. But I really don't understand. I mean, Trump is for low taxes. RFK is for high. RFK thinks that Louis Farrakhan is a wonderful guy. Louis Farrakhan's a virulent anti-Semite. RFK believes in abortion up to the moment of birth. Donald Trump does not. I mean, I can't think of much.
He's gone against the abortion thing lately.
No, he hasn't. All he said is it's up to the states. And that's because Donald Trump understands the government that was created by the founders of this country, in which they said the federal government does only these limited things. Everything else is decided by the states. That's not against the abortion issue. It's saying it's up to the states, right?
Correct. I think we need to have our government much more compartmentalized. I think that the legislature needs to do their job so the judicial system doesn't have to do their job for them.
I'd like to see that happen. I don't know when it's going to start, but I'd like to see it happen. Andrew, you're a great naysayer. You got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson.
Please, ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
With great humility, I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars. Lars.
And now.
And then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. If you're like me, 4 years ago in the summer of 2020, you got very frustrated by a couple of things in particular. Number one, Antifa and BLM rioters out in the streets burning things down. Total body count, 36 homicides, $3 billion in property damage. And you wondered, where are the cops? And why aren't the cops doing something to handle all this? And then, from the most unlikely of circumstances, the Democrats are holding their national convention in Chicago, which is, at least in decades gone by, not been exactly the most peaceful place for the Democrats to hold a convention, but there you go. But how are the Chicago cops handling the DNC protesters? At least my little sample of it from a distance, it looks pretty good. So I wanted to check in with our friend Jonathan Cho, journalist with the Discovery Institute. Jonathan, it's good to have you back on the program. Tell me what you've been seeing on the streets outside the DNC convention.
Well, Lars, today's day three of the DNC, but last night I'm still recovering from arguably one of the wildest protests and riots that kind of went off the rails. Cops arresting Antifa, far-left activists. It was quite a scene, but so far reports of more than 70 people arrested last night. But get this, Lars, all of them have now been released without being charged.
Of course. They weren't charged and released. They were just cut loose?
Yeah, they were just cut loose, Lars. I think they did the cops. Look, I want to give, first of all, the cops a lot of credit. Chicago PD doing a tremendous job. And compared to the protesters in terms of sheer numbers, the cops, it appears there are 10x more cops on the streets than actual activists. So that's a good thing. But at least last night, when all these arrests were being made in downtown Chicago near the Israeli consulate, they just clear them off the streets, put them in zip ties, release them right afterwards.
I don't understand that kind of tactic. I'm not sure which police academy they taught that one in. Because, Jonathan, I was prepared to say, of the videos I saw last night, I saw more than a few where the cops literally would chase some of these jokers down the street, far away from where the main protest mob was, and chase them down, tackle them, and take them into custody. I assumed that some of them, if you've broken the law and the police arrest you, and that's the only way they can arrest you, is if they believe you've broken the law, that at least they'd say, and you're going to be charged with breaking the law. What do you think? What do you think's going on there? Is this just City?
Yeah, and I think really it was a logistics play more so than anything else. Like you said, those videos, and I shot some of that video. No doubt, some of the officers were extremely aggressive. In fact, many were applauded for actually being able to do their jobs last night, and in fact, throughout this entire DNC so far, preventing serious, violence and rioting and vandalism from occurring. But again, what you saw, online of the actual, activists being taken into custody, they are put into the wagon and then, taken down to the station, but then essentially released. So it just would take so much manpower and logistics to book everybody and charge them at this point. So that's exactly what's happening. But other than that, the cops are protecting the venues. They are protecting the security perimeter around the DNC. So there's another protest happening right now. I'm in Union Park. This is where the rallies usually take place, just minutes from the United Center. So we'll see where this rally goes.
I guess, Jonathan, I don't know if you've seen this, but I've seen the videos of this happening. There are people out there, these pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas terrorism group supporters in America who I don't think have a clue about what's going on. All this gays for Palestine kind of nonsense that I wish we'd just give them a free trip for a week to Gaza so they could experience what that population, that Muslim population, would do with gays for Gaza. But what I kept wondering about is, well, why are we not seeing, you know, more done, and then to see the arrests and then hear that, but nothing's happening. These people are doing everything they can to provoke. They tried to take away or take apart the big metal fence around the DNC venue. They've been burning American flags. They've been hoisting Palestinian flags. I mean, is there any part of this that is pro-America, or is this more of a, not an anti DNC, but it's an anti-America protest? Is it unfair to sum it up that way?
No, you're 100% right. That's exactly what I was going to say. The activists on the streets the past couple days now, they're anti-American. They hate the current capitalism system, the free market system that the U.S. has. They're calling for a revolution. I mean, these are the folks who are pushing Marxism, communism. These are the socialist groups. These are the who've been fueling all the campus protests, all of the pro-Hamas protests since October 7th. They've all descended here now to Chicago. They've flown in. They've bust in. So you've got this cocktail of just, you know, a combustible cocktail of far-left activists, and in many cases, anarchists and Antifa, who just want to latch on to this and cause chaos.
What about the security? What kind of security are you seeing at the venue itself? And I was going to ask you this, since the Democrats always seem to be concerned that they have this belief that Black and Hispanic Americans are unable to get driver's licenses, have you seen a lot of Black and Hispanic Americans turned away from the DNC convention because they lack picture ID?
Well, I can tell you that the DNC right now is heavily fortified. You know, there have been no major issues. I mean, cops everywhere, fencing, like you said, barricades. It is like a war zone. But regarding what's around the United Center on the west side of Chicago, what we're seeing, the story that's not being told by mainstream media, is the fact that there are so many illegal immigrants now on street corners begging, you know, selling M&Ms on the corner. That's a story right now that will be ongoing.
Well, in fact, that's something I could see them protesting against, saying, hold on, we want a revolution, but how about all these people who've invaded our country with the acquiescence of the Biden-Harris administration, and now they're occupying the housing and to some extent the jobs and sucking up the social services? I would think that some of those people we saw from Chicago, you know, average folks who over the last 6 months have been very angry that their city government is flushing billions of dollars to take care of illegal aliens and not doing much of anything to actually, you know, service the needs of people who actually live in Chicago legally.
Yeah, and not just some of the residents, but many of the homeless Americans on the streets right now. I'm at a hotel here in the Chinatown neighborhood, just minutes from the United Center, and there's an illegal immigrant hotel essentially a few blocks away, and down the street you've got a homeless encampment. So the juxtaposition is just so obvious right now. And I spoke to some of the homeless there. They're like, we can't believe these Venezuelans are getting money, or have cars right now, have places to rest, but we have to stay in tents.
I mean, that is kind of amazing. The illegal aliens get a hotel room and the American homeless live in a tent on the streets. That's the way it's gone down. And this all within a few blocks distance from the Democrats' big shindig.
Yeah, and none of the Democrats right now, at least on the main stage, are talking about this inconvenient truth, not to mention all the inner city gang violence, the black on black crime that keeps happening in this community. The Democrats don't want to talk about that, apparently.
That is Jonathan Cho. Jonathan, it's always a pleasure to have you on. That's Jonathan Cho, journalist with the Discovery Institute from Seattle. Glad to get your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Coming up, we'll talk about the lying job numbers of Kamala Harris. Well, summertime.
And now, this musical message to anyone who wants to indoctrinate our school children.
Hey, teacher, leave it Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show.
Today's jobs numbers make clear Bidenomics is working. Last month, we created 187,000 new jobs. That means today 187,000 more Americans are able to go to work, to provide for their family and invest in their future.
Now, of course, that's Kamala Harris from 1 year ago, August of last year, talking about, you see this? Bidenomics is working. Yeah, well, guess what? It's not. And in fact, some numbers slipped out just about the time the Democrats were beginning to meet in Chicago. And it turns out that a lot of the jobs that we heard had been created from spring of last year to spring of this year, yeah, they were off by about a million. In other words, they were high by about a million. I think Kamala Harris is high most of the time, but they were high and they overestimated the number of jobs created. Funny how it works that way. The Biden administration announces new job numbers, and then a couple of months later, they say, hey, remember those big numbers we told you about a couple of months ago? Yeah, they're not as big as we told you they were. I'll get into the details on that. But first, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And if you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. If you're a naysayer, we'll put you right to the head of the line. You just got to call in. If you want to answer our poll on X, we put up a brand new question each and every day. Today's question: Donald Trump has suggested that all government employees should be banned from all lobbying of either the Congress or the bureaucrats. I agree with that idea. Let's see if you do. Vote on the poll question at Lars Larson Show on X and also on my website at LarsLarson.com. Now, let me grab a couple of calls first. First to Johnny. Johnny, sorry about the long wait. Welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Thank you. Big fan, long-time KVI listener.
Thank you.
So the thing about RFK, so two things really quickly here. He's against the price fixing, and he's for defeating Kamala Harris. Now, you look at this, you got RFK, Tulsi Gabbard, and Nikki Haley. Trump's uniting them. Politics makes strange bedfellows. This is a big thing I'm excited about. It's some good news.
Well, and it sounds like later on today, Johnny, apparently RFK Jr. is having an event or giving a speech about 30 minutes away from where Donald Trump is holding a rally. So it begins to look like maybe the two of them are going to meet in person. RFK Jr. says he's going to have some major speech that he's going to give on Friday. And when he does that, I suspect he may be ready to endorse Donald Trump. The problem is, it's tough for me to wrap my head around that because the two are so diametrically opposed. They're on the same side, I believe, on the Ukraine war. So that's one thing. They're on the same side when it comes to mandatory vaccines because Trump is against mandatory and so is RFK Jr. But other than that, everything else they disagree on.
Price fixing and defeating Kamala. They are on the same side.
So. Okay, and fair enough. That's a good point. But what, I guess I thought of it this way. If I was really desperate for a job, could you imagine if I told my audience, I'm desperate for a job. I'm going to go to work as a producer for Rachel Maddow over at MSNBC. You'd say, Lars, you're selling out. You're going to take a job working for somebody that you completely disagree with?
I'm not disagreeing you on that, but I am looking at the positives here. This coalition at Tulsi, RFK, and Nikki Haley, that's getting a middle segment of voters that can't swallow voting for Harris or Trump, and that's a win for us.
That's a very good point. Johnny, thanks for the call. Let's go to Kelly. Hey, Kelly, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hi, Lars. What I'm wondering is, at the Democratic Convention, they have fences, three rows of fences. They have security to get in. You have to have ID. But the Democratic Party doesn't require that on our borders. Our borders are open. If they're for everybody, why do they have all these fences up at their Democratic Party?
Well, Kelly, the only way I've been able to explain Democrats and the only way I've been able to explain them is to say the Democrats have to have double standards or they'd have no standards. So they say publicly, walls don't work. but we want a wall around our party convention to protect itself, to protect the Democrats inside from the extreme far-left Democrats outside. Photo ID is unfair and racist when it comes to voting, but photo ID is absolutely required to get into the DNC meeting. And if you say, well, that doesn't make any sense, those are contradictory, you say, yep. The Democrats have to have double standards. They apply one standard to themselves. They apply an entirely different standard to everybody else. And they don't seem to notice the difference. Do you think?
I agree. I totally agree. And people need to wake up. I mean, that's just a prime example of showing they only care for themselves.
Well, and imagine this, Kelly. You've got a whole, you know, raft of, I don't know, there's a flock of seagulls. I don't know what you call a whole bunch of Democrats in one place, a herd. But in any case, you've got a whole bunch of Democrats there. It's the biggest gathering of Democrats every 4 years. And you've got all of these reporters from all the major media, not just in the United States, but from around the world. It's a big international event, the choice of a president, or and this is part of the process. You would think that there would be TV reporters and radio reporters all over the place who are always looking for a story angle on a big event. You'd think they'd stand outside those multiple layers of fences you pointed out and say, here is the same group gathered for its every 4 years meeting that says that walls don't work, and yet they have a big 8-foot metal wall around the DNC convention and lots of cops, and you can't get in without picture ID. You would think that'd be an ideal stand-up, except for the fact that most of the legacy media in America is carrying water for the Democrats. They don't want to make them look bad. They're glad to make Donald Trump look bad. I mean, like the young lady who asked Trump yesterday, he was in I think it was yesterday or the day before, he was in Howell, Michigan. And from where she got this info, she said, have you come to Howell, Michigan because the town is known for a white supremacist who lives here? And Trump said, who was here 3 years ago in 21? And the person answered, Joe Biden. He said, exactly, thank you. And he walked off because, you know, they will ask different questions of Donald Trump than they would ever ask of Kamala Harris or Tim Walz. And I think all three of them should face hard questions, all four of them counting J.D. Vance. But they apply an entirely different set of standards. And I think even some of the reporters realize what hypocrites they are. What they apparently don't realize is how much they're being used. Because they're becoming the PR megaphone for the Democrat Party, and that only represents about half of America.
I agree, and if we remember back a couple years ago, the Democrats didn't want old white guys voting.
Yeah.
For a VP, an old white guy.
Yep, she picks a VP, old white guy. And, of course, Barack Obama, who last night and his wife was all about playing the race card, but didn't mention that when her husband picked a second-in-command, a vice president, they picked a demented old white guy who was demented at the time he was chosen. And, by the way, when Joe Biden had run before, he got about 1% support. So Barack Obama chooses him as VP and says, never underestimate Joe's ability to F things up. Kelly, thanks for the call. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. Always ask Lars if he wants to run for public office, like president.
Do you know how much power I'd have to give up to be president?
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'll get back to your phone calls and emails shortly, but I want to talk about Kamala Harris, and I want to talk about energy, and I want to talk about, well, as Sherlock Holmes would say, the dog that didn't bark. In other words, why are so many members of Congress, especially the Democrats, being so quiet about Kamala Harris's energy agenda? And Daniel Turner joins me now, president of Power of the Future. You know, Daniel, yesterday a gentleman called the show, and he said, Lars, we don't need to have the presidential debates. We already know where Trump stands on things. And I said, we do. And he said, and we already know where Kamala Harris stands. And I said, no, we don't. And he said, what do you mean? Don't we know where she stands? And I said, no, we don't. unless you want to make the assumption that she still stands in the same place based on things she said a year ago, 2 years ago, 5 or 10 years ago. But she can always say, well, that was what I thought then. There's a reason she's being quiet and members of Congress are being quiet, isn't there?
There is. And reversal on major positions like a ban on fracking, those aren't evolutions, right? It's not as if I said to you, hey, you know, Lars, I didn't used to like spinach, but I've had it a couple times, and now I think it's okay, right? This is a major reversal on a well-established policy position. And the reason why she doesn't want to talk to the media or go on record or have a difficult interview is because especially someone like yourself would say, Madam Vice President, walk me through the reversal. What data did you see? What changed your mind? She doesn't have an answer to that. The reason why she changed her mind is because she wants to win states like Pennsylvania. So she says, sure, I don't believe in fracking anymore. The problem with her reversal of the fracking ban, and as I'm glad you pointed this out, she hasn't said anything. An anonymous staffer on a Friday afternoon said, oh, the vice president no longer supports a fracking ban. I'm sorry, that is not good enough. We need to hear from her.
No, because, and Daniel, I do this to Republicans who come on the show, too. Occasionally, we'll talk to what's known as a surrogate, somebody who is speaking for. And I'm always aware that if you're speaking for a governor, a senator, a presidential candidate, that the candidate is free to throw that staffer under the bus. Nobody but his close friends knows the staffer anyway. So if the candidate comes out later and says, I'm for a fracking ban, and I say, hold on, your staffer said you were not. Yeah. He said that, but he didn't know what he was talking about. It's completely deniable. And yet they may be doing it to try to throw a little oil on the water and quiet things down. Do you think?
Exactly. And that's why she has no policy positions on her website. She's issued no policy positions, even in the few talks that she's given. And that major economic address that got all the media excited, she didn't lay out any policy positions. She laid out this sort of vague vision of a better tomorrow where everything is going to be A-OK. And that's the policy position that she was entitled to lay out in 2019 when she was a visionary candidate. But Kamala Harris has a 3.5-year record now as a chief executive of this nation. And so to lay out this vision of when I'm elected president, things are going to be hunky-dory, well, why aren't they now? And quite frankly, that's a lot of what I saw yesterday in the convention. Barack Obama, Bernie Sanders, Michelle Obama, they all laid out this vision of how great things will be if we only elect them one more time. Well, they've been in charge of this country for 16 of the last 20 years, and things kind of stink. So when does the buck ever stop with them?
By the way, Daniel, on the energy issue, I want people to understand how structurally impossible what they're proposing is. And I don't know if you've seen these numbers, but one of my great producers, Mackenzie Prunty, who's a great producer, but she came up with this study that's a brand new study, I think. And it says, if you want to do the Biden-Harris plan, or the Harris-Biden plan, whatever you want to call it, and you have all this wind energy and all this solar energy, it has to go from where it's made to where people use it. And we need about 91,000 miles of transmission lines, brand new ones, not just to replace the old aging ones, but also the ones to transport energy from where it's going to be made, say by wind turbines, where there isn't any energy production now, to where it's being used. And you say, okay, what's the problem? They say, well, the study says that we now build about 645 miles of this stuff every year. And it's not, you know, this isn't the little wire in your neighborhood on top of a creosote pole. These are major transmission lines, and we need 91,000 miles. You say, okay, well, if we continued building the way we're building, how soon could we get the stuff that they say we're going to need in 10 years to power the country? You say, it'll be finished about 141 years from now, plus or minus. And you say, well, that isn't going to work. And you say, well, how about if we triple the number of miles? I don't even know what that would cost or whether we have the materials or the people to do it, because this is mostly a hands-on. This is not something you do on a laptop computer or a desktop computer. It involves building structures and hanging giant wires. You say, if you could triple it, how soon will it be done? About 50 years from now. Well, that isn't soon enough. We need it done by the mid-2030s. Oh, well, you're going to have to do it about 20 times as fast. None of that can work, can it?
None of it can. And then there are even on the front end problems of we don't mine enough of the raw materials to even supply for the manufacturing of these products. The amount of copper, nickel, lithium, cobalt, we need to mine minerals more so 5-6 times more than we're currently doing right now. And yet the same administration is refusing to allow several very important mines to even open.
Well, and you just brought up an interesting point. Can you imagine what, if you think the left end, the far left end that believes that Hamas, the terrorists, are a worthy group, and that Israel perhaps has to be destroyed because that's the mob out in the streets in Chicago. Can you imagine what the environmental mob in the DNC is going to say if Kamala Harris comes out and says, I'm going to clear the decks and we're going to start mining lithium and cobalt and copper and everything else. We're going to be digging holes all over the United States and all over the world. Can you imagine what their reaction is going to be?
Absolutely. And, you know, you're raising something very important that those of us of a certain age know. One of the original political violent groups in America are the environmental left. And a lot of them sadly started in the Pacific Northwest.
Yep.
But they are the original, you know, violent before BLM, before Antifa. It was the radical green movement. And, yeah, we can assume if things don't go their way, that the violence will start again.
You know, to your point, Daniel, a couple of years before 9/11, I sat down with an FBI SAC, special agent in charge of a region. And we were doing an interview because we were doing a long form story. And I said, what is the biggest domestic terrorism threat to America? Now, remember, this is prior to 9/11 and prior to, you know, Antifa, prior to BLM, prior to Al-Qaeda, Taliban, the whole nine yards. And he said the biggest domestic terrorist threat is the environmental terrorists. And he named the Earth Liberation Front, and we were right down the list. Now, I don't trust the FBI as much these days as I used to back then, but that was their assessment. These environmental groups, as you said, they don't just pour sugar into the fuel tanks of big equipment. They burn things down. They end up killing people in some cases, and they do massive destruction to the things that people build. And you say,
they do.
And you think they won't hesitate?
And the fact that they have been silent on the so-called reversal of Kamala Harris proves to me that this reversal is nothing but a gigantic lie. If she genuinely reversed her position on fracking, these groups would have come out with statements and they would be protesting and they would be pulling their funding right now. But none of that is happening. And that's because these groups know that this is just a necessary statement she has to put out in order to win key states like Ohio and Pennsylvania. If Donald Trump came out today and said, you know, I changed my mind on Dobbs, I no longer believe it, the pro-life groups would have a statement. The fact that Kamala Harris has reversed her position on fracking and they are silent means they know this is all just a big, gigantic lie.
And it'll all be fixed after the election. That's Daniel Turner, the president of Power of the Future. Daniel, it's always a pleasure. Back in a moment, I want to get to your phone calls and emails, maybe even a naysayer, because we love naysayers on the Lars Larson Show. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
Donald Trump with a warning to Hamas at the Republican Jewish Coalition Conference.
If you spill a drop of American blood, we will spill a gallon of yours.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's Wednesday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, proudly serving the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho for the last quarter of a century. We're glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And by the way, our X poll today, should all government employees be banned from lobbying the Congress or its bureaucrats? I think it's a terrific idea. Say, if you want to serve in Congress, in the Senate or the House, you want to run for president, you want to work for the federal bureaucracy, you are banned for life from ever being a lobbyist. So, in other words, you make it a choice. That way you avoid the First Amendment problem of saying, you're denying me my right to free speech. No, we're not. We're saying if you decide to work in this job, it comes with certain requirements. I mean, there are requirements on our members of the military. that when you're in the military under the UCMJ, you can't speak your mind when it comes to the commander in chief or your higher authority, your higher command officers. You can't badmouth them. Well, why not? I have First Amendment rights. No, you volunteered for military service. You gave up some of that either temporarily or in some cases even permanently. Let's go to George, who's a naysayer. Hey, George, welcome to the program. What do you and I disagree about that makes you a naysayer?
Well, I disagree that leaving the abortion up to the states is the right policy. I think it's the wrong policy. I don't think you can say it's okay for a mother to kill her baby in the womb in any state. If you say it's wrong in one position, I think that should be a national law that bans abortion.
Well, I'd have to ask you this. Do you think the Constitution gives the federal government the authority to order all of the states how they must treat people in their states? Because I believe in federalism, which says the federal government has certain limited authority, you know, the enumerated powers of the federal government. And the founders said we should give the federal government a certain set of tasks. They don't stay inside the lines very well, but that's a problem that applies to a lot of other areas. And we need to yank the federal government back. Say, you know, like anybody who's working a job, if you're given a job as the radio station's engineer, and you're working on the transmitters and the wires and all that stuff, yeah, good. When you start giving advice or going over and saying, well, I'm going to help out the sales department, or I'm going to come over and tell Lars what should be on the talk show, you say, no, you're outside your lane. The founders said the lane for the Congress is the enumerated powers of Congress. Did they say, and the U.S. Congress can decide whether the states should make abortion legal or illegal? I think it's up to the states.
Do you think murder should be not legal in some states and legal in others?
Well, unfortunately, nowhere in America is, I'm answering your question, nowhere in America is abortion defined as murder. And in fact, doctors do things that in any, if a doctor cuts my arm off, but he's doing it for a medical reason, then it's a legitimate medical procedure. If he's doing it because he's angry at me and he says, I'm going to cut your arm off, it's an assault. So it's a criminal matter if he does it without a medical reason. And the point of view of the abortion crowd is, well, this is a medical procedure, and they say it's between a woman and her doctor. The problem with that theory is that doctors are licensed by the states. Primarily, they have drug dispensing licenses that come from the federal government, from the DEA. But does the state have a right to say there are medical procedures that are legal in our state and there are medical procedures that are illegal? I don't like the outcome either, but I've asked you, does the federal government have the authority to order all of the states that abortion must be illegal in all 50 states? And that's before you get to the practical problem. George, if we had a two-thirds majority in the House and a two-thirds majority in the Senate and a Republican president, do you think we could pass a nationwide abortion ban?
Sure, I think we could. But I think that Trump's position is a political position, and as such, it's okay as a political position.
No, but it's not. The position is the one that was instructed by the Supreme Court, which is the body that determines what does the Constitution say. Now, for 50 years, the Democrats insisted somewhere in that Constitution we found a right to abortion. And everybody who's actually read the document, unlike the Democrats who are sorely uninformed, finds no right to abortion in the Constitution. So once the Supreme Court said there is no right to abortion in the Constitution, then it became up to the states to decide, well, Should we make it legal or illegal? Idaho makes it illegal. Other states like Oregon and Washington make it legal all day long and anytime you want.
And the outcome of an abortion is it kills a human every time it's committed.
I agree.
But it is, in essence, murder.
Well, it may be in essence murder.
It's not just a medical procedure.
George, you and I agree on that. But what you have to do is get the representatives of the people in the states to say, yes, it is a murder, or it's unlawful at the very least. And I ask you, do you think with a two-thirds majority in the House and the Senate, which we don't have and we're nowhere close to it, do you think you could actually achieve a nationwide abortion ban? And would you ban all abortions, all of them?
I would ban all of them.
and you wouldn't have any exceptions whatsoever.
I'll make exceptions for the health of the mother.
Okay, how about rape and incest? Because I've talked to women who grew up. Their birth was the product of rape and incest, and they are perfectly fine human beings today. So even on that one, not all pro-life people agree about that. But George, you're a good naysayer, and I appreciate the call. It's Wednesday, and it's the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
With great humility, I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars. Lars.
And now.
And then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, and welcome back to the Radio Northwest Network. It's a pleasure to be with you. And if you want to join the conversation, we always make that easy. 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, you get to go right to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. Emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. And of course, vote on our poll on X or X poll. You can find that question at Lars Larson Show. And of course, it's always brought to you by Ultimate Truck Service. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Now, if there was any kind of silver lining to both what the pandemic did to America, that's what the China virus did to America, and of course what was done to America by government agencies, most of them state and local, if there was a silver lining at all, the one I see is that it has vastly popularized the idea of school choice, because parents, for the first time, got a look inside what was going on inside their classrooms, and they were horrified by it. And a lot of American parents said, I'm getting my kids out of the government schools. They're failing. They're not doing a good job. I'm going to take them somewhere else. The problem is we're seeing attacks on school choice, even from some of those in what I guess you'd have to call it the legacy media, corporate media, like the Seattle Times Daily Dead Fish Wrapper. And Lee Fenez pointed this out. She's director of the Center for Education at Washington Policy. Lee, welcome back.
Well, thanks so much, Lars.
So what is the Seattle Times saying to parents, and why are they attacking school choice?
Well, it's truly amazing. On Monday, the Seattle Times editorial board posted an article attacking vouchers, amongst other things. They use the cover attacking Project 2025 that some people may have heard about, but that's really not the issue. They attacked vouchers with a sentence that has three lies in it. Lars, okay?
Let's count them.
They say, let's count them, all right? It says this. These are the two, the sentences, the lead in is this, but under Project 25's voucher plan, the choice would rest with the private school.
This, no, it
here's
doesn't.
The sentence. Exactly. That's lie number one. Lie number one, okay?
Yep.
Thus, the private or religious schools could pick up the top-tier students and athletes. That's lie number two.
Yep.
And leave the three others in public schools with even fewer resources. Lie number three. And they're just so afraid of giving parents control over their own education money the taxpayers provide to educate their children and let parents decide where the money goes. That is why the lies are becoming so extreme here.
Even a bunch of knuckleheads, like on the Daily Dead Fish Wrapper Seattle Times editorial board, who could believe that if you said to parents, here's a voucher, take your child anywhere you want to go. If you want to go to a conventional government school, leave your child there. If you want to take your child to a private school, a parochial school, an online school, and do their schooling from home, use the voucher for any of the above, that somehow the school gets the choice? I mean, are the people on this editorial board just congenitally stupid or what?
Well, they are, I think, behind some of this religious victory, okay? They are very afraid of the money going to a private religious school if that's what the parents want. And so they are lying about these programs. Let's just talk about vouchers. I just typed in, we have vouchers of all kinds in our public policy. We have vouchers to college called Pell Grants. They're for low-income students, so they can go to any private college they want to, including private religious schools. We have vouchers for people who are on welfare to send their kids to a private religious nursery school to help them. We have vouchers for school, for food, you know, food grants. I looked up here just now in Washington State, we have housing vouchers. The city of Tacoma gives out housing vouchers. The Department of Commerce gives vouchers of $10,000 to help small businesses expand their international sales. We have vouchers for all kinds of deserving groups of subgroups of populations who are not being well served by whatever policy. And certainly the Seattle Times editorial board knows that the people most harmed by the one-size-fits-all system of public education are low-income minority children assigned to failing inner-city schools.
Yep.
Yet, and they're always talking about this. They're always talking about this to make the argument that taxpayers need to pay more money because that's the only solution they see. But when we start talking about it, when the conservatives start saying, yeah, it's a good idea to give the money directly to low-income parents so they can choose the private religious school, oh, no, we can't have that, says the Seattle Times editorial board, because they're not really interested in solutions. They're just interested in posturing. And I was just so shocked by this article because there was so much misinformation. If you look at the data, if you look at the evidence, it is there are now 20 million children out of 55 million school children in the country that are live in a state that offers access to a public aid to go to a private school, including religious schools.
Yep.
That's nearly 40% of all. That's 32 states. 12 of the states have got universal school choice programs. This is a mainstream idea that the legacy media here in Washington State does not want to talk about because it is such a groundbreaking earthquake here, breaking up the monopoly over public education.
Well,
and it's not true. But go ahead. Sorry.
To your point about religious bigotry, because almost every year, I see a bunch of stories from the likes of the Seattle Times and the Portland Oregonian about what an ugly legacy of racism the Northwest has. And it does. And you say, okay, how about the legacy of anti-Catholic bigotry? I'm a Protestant. I don't agree with the Catholics on theology. But having said that, this region has almost as ugly a history of discriminating against Catholic schools, saying we don't like them because they're Catholic. Now, if they'd been Protestant schools, they probably would have been okay with it. There has been religious bigotry against Catholics in this country. The biggest single lynching in America was an anti-Italian, anti-Catholic lynching. It was not of black people. It was of Italians. And so that's point one. But point two, if you say, what if they know how to run schools really well? Well, that doesn't matter. Well, I'll tell you what, Leif, where are most Medicare dollars spent? They're spent at hospitals and clinics. And who runs the majority of them? Religious orders. A lot of them Catholic religious orders. Why do you think we have, you know, Spokane has Sacred Heart, you know, and you have all these organizations that are religious organizations because they happen to do a good job running hospitals. What's the problem?
Yeah. Yes, I think that's such a great point. I have been at these schools that are Catholic schools. I'm Protestant too, but I so admire the Catholics for their charitable approach to education. They have created inner city schools just to serve the low-income children, immigrant children that don't have a good opportunity except to go to a private Catholic school in Seattle. Otherwise, they will fall behind and they will be relegated to lives of poverty. And the Catholics have stood up to this challenge and created schools to serve exactly this needy community. And
what do we have
the Seattle Times doing?
Maybe the editorial board of the Daily Dead Fish Wrapper Seattle Times needs to explain its religious bigotry. That is Leif Fenna from the Center for Education and Washington Policy. Your calls are welcome. And we're going to talk more about the lies of Kamala Harris, and I'll call them out one by one, and I'll get to your calls, too, at 866-439-5277. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. If you're dealing with...
some solid advice from Senator John Kennedy.
Look, if you hate cops just because of the cops, the next time you get in trouble, call a crackhead.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Before we begin, I want to address the massive scandal around the revised job numbers that were just announced this morning. A little while ago, just before I came up, I got to see them. And it really isn't a revision. It's a total lie. Total lie. There's never been any revision like this. They wanted it to come out after the election, but somehow it got leaked. It got leaked. Government leaks, too.
That is Donald Trump talking about yesterday's news, and the original estimate was that the Biden-Harris administration had overestimated the number of added jobs in America by 1 million. Well, it turned out to be less than that, 881,000 jobs that never existed. And yet the media was happy to report to the public why the Biden administration has been adding jobs left and right. Look at all these big numbers. And then later on, I think they plan to have this information come out after November 5th. They said, oh, oopsie, we overestimated the number of brand new jobs by about 900,000. Yeah, because a lie like that wouldn't have any effect on, say, people believing Kamala Harris when she came out last week with her big economic plan and said people can barely buy the necessities of life. She said that. And then within about 90 seconds, she said, why, we have the best economy that America has ever seen. Now, think about those two messages. Americans, average Americans, can barely buy what they need to get by. Bread and milk and ground round. And she says, you can barely afford these things because of the greed of corporations, according to Kamala Harris. But then in the same breaths, 90 seconds later, she says, oh, but we have the best economy we've ever had. And look at the jobs numbers, because those jobs numbers have been very significant to Kamala Harris and to Joe Biden. And as Donald Trump says, it turned out to be a big fat lie. Let's go to Neri in Seattle, listening on KVI and the Radio Northwest Network. Neri, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hi, Lars. I have a question regarding the, I guess that's the Chevron doctrine.
Yeah, right? It's called the Chevron doctrine. And just for everybody listening so they understand, the Chevron doctrine for about 40 years was a doctrine of the Supreme Court that said if the Congress creates an agency like the EPA and says go out and safeguard the environment, and then the EPA does that job for a while, and then somebody gets a wild hair and says, hey, let's go out and block people from building homes on their own land. That actually happened to a couple in Idaho, and they had to fight all the way to the Supreme Court for permission to build a house on a piece of property they owned that wasn't near water at all, even though the EPA used the excuse there was water somewhere nearby, and that meant they couldn't build their home. That's a practical example. So when those cases would go to the Supreme Court, and a couple would say, let us build on our land, the EPA would walk in and say, we, the agency, have decided that this should be a rule. And if this court said, well, did the Congress decide that? Nope. Under the Chevron doctrine, the Supreme Court assumed the agency was always right and the people were always wrong. Well, the U.S. Supreme Court this year threw the Chevron doctrine out and said, we're no longer going to assume that the bureaucrats are always right and the people are always wrong. You see any problem with that?
No, the question is, when they threw the Chevron doctrine, what does that mean for the outlying deep state?
Well, it means that the deep state has less power. The short answer, Neri, if you want to hear it, the short answer is it means the bureaucrats have less power. It means that if the EPA wants a rule, all they've got to do is say, we're going to go to Congress and we're going to say, we think we should have a law that tells people they can't build on their own property because there might be water somewhere nearby. And that actually describes that case in Idaho because we've talked about it a lot. Then you can go to members of Congress who were elected by the people and can be tossed out of office if they make the people angry enough and say, we'd like to have this law. And in almost all cases, the members of Congress are going to say, I ain't pissed. I'm not voting for that. If I vote for that, they'll throw me out of office. So it doesn't become a law and they don't do it. But you don't let the bureaucrats make those decisions, right?
Right. That's exactly my point is like, okay, so under the Chevron law, if the FDA can declare another pandemic?
Well, it would be the CDC that would declare a pandemic. But it's not important whether they declare something. What's important is what gets done with that information.
Can they enforce it? Can they actually do another mandate for vaccine?
Well, no, they can't. Neri, if you've been paying attention and following along, the CDC nor the FDA can order people to take a vaccine. Joe Biden tried to say that he, as president, could order people to take a vaccine. He tried to use another agency called OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. He said, I'm going to force, do you remember when he did this the first year? I'm going to force every single person who works at a job to take the jab. And the Supreme Court looked at that and said, no, you're not. You don't have the authority. And OSHA does not have the authority. He was trying to use the authority of an agency that tells people to wear safety glasses and hard hats and workplace safety, that somehow under that law you could force people to take the jab. And the Supreme Court said, no, you don't have the authority. So at this point, if they want a law that says people have to take the jab, then members of Congress are going to have to pass that law, and they will be the victims, I think, at the next election. But Neri, thanks for the call. Let's go to Mike in Happy Valley. Hey, Mike, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Hi, Lars. Thanks for everything you do. I'll just get straight to it, Lars. I come from a very strong military family. My father retired as chief of staff at the Oregon Military Department.
Yeah.
Okay. And he actually retired during the Clinton administration, passed away just before Joe Biden was elected. And he had warned me and everybody else that it's not just about economics at this point. We really need to think about our military. And that's with what's going on, that's a huge thing. Number two, my brother-in-law is actually a brigadier general in the Mexican military, works in the presidential palace, and the buzz is there, and I'm not going to mention names. I don't want to mention his name. But
okay, just get to the point, though. I'm not sure where you're going with all this, but why don't you get right to the point?
Well, where I'm going with it is, Lars, is that until we have voter ID, require ID to vote, they are all saying we are in a big world of hurt. It'll never change.
I agree with you. Why didn't you just say that? Because, you know, all the history about your family, thank you for your family's military service. But I agree with you. And the Democrats agree with you in saying they won't let anybody into the DNC convention unless you have a picture ID. Picture ID is required for all kinds of things, checking into a hotel, cashing a check, getting on an airplane. And all of a sudden, it's only the Democrats who say, but you shouldn't require picture ID to vote. And in fact, Biden-Harris, that regime, is so dead set on this, they have actually filed with the Supreme Court to block the state of Arizona from requiring not just picture ID, but proof that you are legally able to vote in America. I mean, it's a crime, a federal crime punishable by 5 years in prison for somebody to register to vote in America if you're not an American. It is a crime for you to vote in America if you're not a citizen. And in fact, state of Arizona wants to enforce it. The Biden-Harris regime and the Democrat Party oppose that because if they don't have illegal aliens, then they lose elections. So it is the Democrats and the Democrats only that are holding us up.
The Lars Larson Show.
The upcoming American elections promise some provocative politics, but be forewarned, the green agenda may lead to some extreme rhetoric.
Die, gas pumper!
So prepare yourself by listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. You would think that for a reporter, and I was one for about 20 years, this would be a juicy story. I mean, you've got people all garbed up, all black head to toe. They're waving banners. They're burning American flags. They're shouting all kinds of ugly slogans. They're cursing at America. And they're doing it in the streets right outside one of the biggest political events of the year, the Democrat National Convention going on in Chicago. And yet somehow there's this real strange silence that is emanating from the major media. So I thought we'd talk about it with Adam Gillette, who's president of the group Accuracy and Media. Adam, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much for having me back.
So you got this big, juicy story. I mean, burning flags, you know, things set on fire, police having to wrestle, police from a Democrat-led city having to wrestle extreme left Democrats to the ground and put them in zip cuffs. You'd think this would be a story that would be all over the legacy and major media.
Exactly. You know, the only thing you could maybe say in their defense is that it's a story if it's surprising, if it's unexpected. Well, all the colleges are on summer break. Of course, they had to go somewhere. So the violent radicals went to Chicago.
And of course, if it's expected. I mean, I'd be lying if I didn't tell you that when I was a reporter, we said, yeah, we talk about man bites dog. We don't do stories on dog bites man. So this is just one of the Democrat dog packs that's doing what dog packs do. Is that the approach?
I guess it's an internal squabble, which any political party has. It's just that this squabble is between the relatively mainstream Democrats and the significantly growing pro-Hamas wing of the party, which is clearly out of control. And more than anything, God bless the police in Chicago. When these people are being told publicly that they're not going to be charged with a crime, and that if they're arrested, it'll be they'll be out, and yet these cops still know and actually do their job and arrest people even when they know their charges are going to be dropped. It doesn't sound like a very fulfilling job, but I appreciate that.
I guess they're there in spirit, if not in fact. But Adam, there were 70 arrests in Chicago last night, and just as you said, they apparently arrested these hooligans, put them in zip cuffs, transported them some distance, and then just cut them loose without even writing them a ticket in most cases. So no charges whatsoever. Is that the Mayor Johnson approach to things, saying, well, we're going to arrest them, but we just won't charge them with any crime? So that's his idea of a compromise?
Well, you know, again, in Chicago's defense, 70 arrests is what they call a calm evening. But what a terrible message it sends, and what incredible violence is going to come from this. Because we saw this in 2020. We saw this with the encampments. We're seeing it now. When you have openly violent people engaged in peaceful but fiery violence, and they feel no repercussions for their actions at all, it will only make things much, much worse. And what I truly fear for is, let's say Trump wins in November. Yo. How many American cities are going to burn? Because you're going to have all of these radicals. It's going to be terrifying. And other side say, well, if...
I just lost you for a second there, Adam. I don't know what's cutting out because of your cell phone. But I got to tell you, the other thing that I've noticed from a distance, I'm not in Chicago this week, but it seems that this is the result of an awful lot of coordination and support from outside. U-Haul trucks full of bricks, U-Haul trucks full of food and pre-printed signs and the rest of this. Is anybody going to try and track down who it is that's putting the money behind this effort to stage these nightly protests or riots outside the DNC?
Well, on a minor level, we've seen unequivocally that groups like the RevComs, the Revolutionary Communist Party, work as outside agitators on these college campuses. They pull the permits for these. Of all of this is the American people. The bulk of these people here aren't paid to be there. These are far left progressive radicals who spent 13 years in traditional schools hearing anti-American DEI garbage. It's our tax dollars that pay to radicalize these people. It's our tax dollars that built this movement. We're doing it to ourselves with our own money, and it's why we need to dramatically reform traditional public education.
I'm talking to Adam Gillette, who's president of the group Accuracy and Media. You know, I don't know if this was a slip on Joe Biden's part, because he gave his little swan song speech in the late evening hours. And I say late evening, it was almost the morning of the next day when Joe Biden actually finished up. I think he finished about 20 minutes after midnight. So you can tell the DNC did not want to give him prime time. But right in the middle of that speech, if you were careful to notice, he made one admission, and he said, and these protesters outside the convention hall, they've got a point. And I thought, this is the president of the United States. I realize he's been kicked to the curb by his own parties. Now, I guess he flew Air Force One off to Santa Barbara, and he's off licking his wounds. But he was saying that the people burning American flags, shouting down and cursing America, declaring their support for Hamas terrorists, that they have a point. I really wish somebody would ask Joe Biden, and what do you think exactly that point is?
Well, what is striking most to me about it is we, for years, heard the hoax about Trump saying good people on both sides, referring to white supremacists as good people.
Fine people.
And it was a hoax. Exactly. Yep. Well, this is Biden literally doing that, saying kind things about the openly pro-Hamas crowd engaged in violence, waving Hamas flags outside. That's him endorsing it. And what it speaks to is the fact that they realize that to rally their base sufficiently, they have to placate the pro-Hamas wing of their party. That's what's most telling and terrifying about this.
Well, and the other thing when it comes to media, since you're the head of accuracy in media, the reporters seem to be giving the party a pass. Instead of going to, say, some of the party leadership or some of the delegates and saying, do you agree with those people out there? Do you agree with Joe Biden that the people who are rioting and burning and getting burning flags and getting arrested, that they have a point? Ask the delegates that. Ask the leadership of the party. Do you support what they're doing out there? Do you recant what they're doing out there? Do you say, no, what they're doing out there is wrong? And the mainstream media is being completely compliant by not even raising the question.
Of course not, because it's not in their interest. Because even forgetting their obnoxiously transparent bias, this is a fragmented media landscape where everybody has their own demo that they're going after, and they cater to them. Well, if you're MSNBC, if you're CNN, if you're the New York Times or WAPO, your demographic, your readership, viewership, they don't see anything negative about their party or negative about the DNC. So those stories aren't going to get clicked on. So even if these reporters weren't incredibly ridiculously biased, they still wouldn't ask those questions or publish those stories because it's not what their audience wants to hear. And these people are in the business of telling their audience what they want to hear rather than actually informing them.
But I do wonder about the question you posed, and that is, I think Trump is going to win in November. I think he may even win by a surprising margin. And I think this is going to stun and shock the Democrats who think that, you know, proposing communism for America, as Kamala Harris did last week, and having a convention where she's anointed as the nominee without any voters being involved at all, while the rest of the Democrat Party is running around saying Donald Trump's trying to crush our democracy. Well, we actually have a republic, but, you know, who's counting? But in this case, it's the Democrats who've thrown democracy out the window. They had a palace coup to get rid of Joe. They had another coup to install Kamala. And they told the delegates, just line up and vote like you would in any Soviet or in Cuba or in Venezuela. And that's the way they do business. And then the question of, well, if and when Trump wins in November, what are these yahoos out in the streets going to be doing then? And I think you're right. I think they're going to try to burn the place down. That's Adam Gillette. He's president of the group Accuracy in Media. Adam, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. And glad to get your phone calls, too. In fact, I'm waiting for some of those naysayers who think that the protesters outside have a point, as Joe Biden said in his speech late at night. I know you had to stay up past your bedtime to hear what he had to say, because the party did not want him in prime time. They have kicked him to the curb. They want to forget about Joe Biden as a bad experience. 866-439-5277. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show.
If you're a pro,
Constantine Kissin on Hamas.
For years now, many of us have been warning that the barbarians are at the gates. We were wrong. They're inside. There are positives as well. I mean, say what you want about Hamas supporters. At least they know what a woman is.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and for more than 25 years, it has served the interests of the Pacific Northwest, stations in Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, and we're glad to be part of that. Oregon Medical Centers brings you this segment, their regenerative medical specialist, Oregon Medical Centers. I do want to mention something that we found out about on Monday. There's a guy that has been on the show so many times, at least dozens, maybe even hundreds of times. His name was Adam Andrzejewski, and he died last weekend. He was 55 years old. He was a marathon runner. He was in great health. He just went to sleep at age 55 on a Saturday night. The next morning, his wife and his daughters found that he didn't wake up. And nothing, no more explanation than that he just passed away. And I'm sorry to see him go, because he was a guy who did something I so admire. For instance, you hear David Cross on this show from time to time. David takes his own time and effort, and what he does is gathers information on illegal aliens, primarily in the Pacific Northwest. He gathers information about illegals in criminal activity, inside of prisons, illegal aliens who commit crimes, and he does it all not for money, not as a job, not for a paycheck, but just because he thinks it should be done. And Adam Andrzejewski was the same way. He'd actually run for governor of Illinois way back when. And then in about 2008, he just decided people should know what's going on. And he started a movement called Publish the Public Checkbook. And what he did was he took information about his local school district. That's where it started. So he was putting together information saying people ought to know how the local schools are spending your money. And he did that. And it was so successful, people liked it. So he said, okay, we're going to expand it. Literally today, you can go to openthebooks.com. Adam's last name is Andrzejewski. That's the way you pronounce it. Kind of tough to spell. Great guy, though. And openthebooks.com has literally billions of records. And no exaggeration, billions of pages of government documents, most of them budgets and things like that. But Adam went beyond all that. He said, look, I'm going to take this data and try to make sense of it, because anybody who's ever, and I've tried to read financial reports and other things, and oftentimes it's just stacks and stacks of numbers and you can't make sense of it. He put in the effort. He had a team of about 30 people, and what they would do is gather information about federal government, state governments, local governments, and then he would highlight the things that he found. He'd tell us about monies that were being spent in ways that were completely foolish. Adam did a fantastic job, and I've been getting a lot of emails about it this week. We learned the news in the middle of the talk show on Monday, and both my producer and I were stunned. We thought, what could have gone wrong? He's 55 years old. He runs marathons. He's in great health. He's got a happy family and a wife and kids and all that. He's running this great effort that's very, very popular and has grown from just him at his kitchen table. I kid you not. But I wanted to mention him because I'm still getting emails from people who remember Adam. They couldn't exactly remember his last name. It's Andrzejewski, and openthebooks.com. But it's something that I would love to see a lot of citizens do. Maybe you've retired from your job and you're wondering, what am I going to do with all my free time? I'll tell you what. I would love to see people who would just pick one little unit of government, your city, your county, your school district, maybe the state budget, maybe portions of your state budget, and say, I'm gonna learn how to read those public documents that describe how your local government or your state government is spending literally tens of billions of dollars of your money. I'm gonna look for the examples where people might say, we shouldn't be spending money on that. And then I'm gonna highlight them. That's how Adam got his start. And what he did was, he just ran this organization as a private nonprofit so that he would just put the information out there. And he shared it on our program as well and others. And I was glad to see him do it. And I think people were glad to see it because I got lots of emails and lots of mentions on social media from people saying, I can't believe this guy found all this information. It's there ready to be grabbed if you want to get it. You have to learn how to file public information requests, public records requests at the federal level, what are called FOIAs, Freedom of Information Act requests. Apparently, they'd file about 60,000 of those things every year, and they'd take all the data they got, and they would publish all of it in an understandable form. And if you don't believe me, go to openthebooks.com and take a look at it. I have no other tie to that organization other than that I admire their work. And one of the best messages I got was from one of his coworkers that we had on the show on Tuesday to talk about Adam's passing that we only learned about on Monday afternoon. It happened over last weekend. And he said, we are going to continue doing what we've been doing, what Adam had done. And it's a great effort. Every single state, in some cases, every single city could benefit if there were one person who said, I will get the public documents, I will show that the documents exist, I will put them on social media or I'll put them up on a website and make them accessible to the people who actually pay all that money. You know, all the taxpayers, you know, you pay your taxes, and I know everybody gripes about taxes. I do too. But if you could see how the money was being spent, And then when the politicians show up at a town hall or at your doorstep and they say, hey, I want you to vote for me, you could actually say, you see this spending? I want to know why this spending is happening. Will you work to stop this foolish waste of our money and spend the money on the things that actually matter? You could get a great example and a game plan for how to do it at OpenTheBooks.com. The man who created it, Adam Andrzejewski, passed away last weekend at the age of 55, leaving behind a wife and three kids. But he created a legacy that is apparently going to live on. You're listening to the Radio Northwest.
The Lars Larson Show.